choose not to develop bad case law by doing that, so we normally have PC for a stop to begin with.
Appreciate that. One of the notions that might be prevalent on this committee is that probably boat operators who are causing problems in maybe many cases are under the influence of some intoxicant. Is that, one, a correct impression, and two is, didn't we make some attempt to do something about that earlier this year? And in follow-up to that, where is that, Bill?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. The committee did consider House Bill 2156 a few months ago. It passed the House. It's pending at Senate Judiciary Committee. And we expect that as they start to consider House bills, that bill will receive consideration on the Senate side.
Hasn't been scheduled yet?
No, they're just about at the end of Senate bills now, I believe, and are about to start picking up the work from that's come over from the House.
Well, we're delighted they're holding hearings now. Let me ask, if we were, I mean, shouldn't that be a major plus with respect to what you're proposing today? I mean, would that minimize a lot of the problems that this bill seeks to address?
House Bill 2156, the Boating Under the Influence Bill, deals with a very serious problem on our waterways, and it certainly, if it passes and becomes law, will put some additional teeth into our statute, and it will deal with what is a very serious problem on our waterways, and that is intoxicated boat operators. The testimony that you received indicated that perhaps up to 60% of all accidents and fatalities result from people that are under the influence. But that bill doesn't get at the other problem, and that is on other operational offenses, speeding, careless operation, inadequate equipment, and so forth, that we try to get those people additional education, additional information, so that when they get back out on the water after that ticket, they're better informed.
Sergeant Anson, would you think those that you have developed the probable cause for a stop, is alcohol often a factor in that stop?
Multnomah County may be the exception to the rule, Mr. Chairman. We did not have any incidents of operating under the influence that we cited for at all during the last boating season. Now, this is sort of a drop from previous seasons, I think partially because of the publicity and partially because everyone knew we were looking hard. I liken, having been a traffic officer, this kind of situation to what we have on the streets. A drunk driver on the street is a serious problem, but there are a whole lot of other folks who are running stop signs, not buckling up, VBR, and so on. And as the other witnesses have noted, we don't have a hook on these folks, and they don't have to know a thing before they get out on the water, unlike the automobile driver. There are an awful lot of people who go out and do something, while not heinous, can be dangerous, unsafe, the speed particularly, going out with an adult-sized life jacket on a very small child, having no idea that the child, if going in the water, can slide right out of that life jacket. These are the kinds of things that I would hope and expect, at least partially, would be in this safe boating class in the offender education. The hook, I think, goes along with that. We do have, I know a lot of people that we have cited in Multnomah County have not appeared. I can't give you numbers, but I know there have been a lot whom we recite and recite. There are others who just go out and make one mistake and then that's it, and they will go to boating classes because we suggest it. I think we're talking about two different things. We've got the real serious one that hopefully 2156 will give us some tools to work with. Now we need this education for the other folks who aren't quite that dangerous and the hook to get some of them into the courts. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sergeant. Further questions? Representative Baum?
Sergeant, what we have kind of here is we have a lot of waters in the state, particularly like my country, the Snake River impoundment and big water, and I think down in southern Oregon and places where we haven't heard about the need for this from our own constituents. And that's why Representative Mason was kind of prodding along a little bit. Sometimes we think, and it's rightfully so, what we look at every morning in our geography is the geography for the rest of the state, and we get focused on our own communities of interest, and we try to do good things for them. Trouble is it we have to go home to these rural areas, and they always want to know why we're doing something to them. And I realize that there's probably a lot of border congestion in this Multnomah County and some of them, the Willamette River particularly, that maybe not be present at all in some of the other parts of the state. And I have a boating family. I have a brother who kayaks, and I mean they're serious. I mean, no one has to train them. That the kids have their own. Everything's first class. Everything's ready to go. They didn't go to school for any of that stuff. It's just common sense type stuff. And they may jump off a dock at a public place because there's no one else in the place. You know, these kind of things. Now there are crowds and problems. So we're just not anxious to run down a road where we passed out a bill earlier on drunk voters that was just kind of barely passed out of the committee with some exceptions in it. And now we come back with a little tweaker bill here that kind of tries to get to the attention of an owner of the boat, because we know the owner is probably the best person to know who was driving the boat to put the pressure on him. I mean, it's a classic kind of thing we face, and we pass out a lot of bills, and the Senate's going to start hearing them next week, and we only have about 100 sitting over there. And so, we have very little confidence that they'll do much in the way of this bill or any other bill that does anything for against criminals, so, or people that are violating the law. And it would be nice if we knew before we moved a bunch of this stuff over there that any of it had a chance of a hearing. And we have received no indication from that side of the body. So this is kind of one of the, on the issue of priorities, we have, and where does this fit, and what does it bring us home for? So that's, Mr. Don Huffner has already been through that with the other bill, so we didn't mean to pick on you, Mr. Weisberg.
Well, one thing that I would point out that might get someone's attention is there's an awful lot of revenue that is not being collected as a result of infraction tickets. And with everyone concerned about revenue in Measure 5, I think that's one aspect of it that that could get people's attention. A lot of people are not showing up, and if they are showing up, they're not paying their fines. We have nothing, no way to touch those folks. And we can continue to pass laws that look good, but they're really a joke if people decide, and it's the worst people who get the break because they don't show up. The people who are sensible and able to respond, well, they'll show up, pay their fine, they'll be good citizens. The ones that you really need to get the hook on are those we have no reach on now. And that's why I think this type of legislation is appropriate. It's the same thing we do with traffic infractions. It's the same thing we do in parking. There's no constitutional sort of problem with it. And it's from a revenue standpoint.
Chairman, what traffic infraction do we make citizens informers on?
Well, we hold certain defendants vicariously responsible for the violations of others. For example, if someone's got an open container in your vehicle and you're the driver, even if you didn't know that that person was secreting an open bottle of beer in their coat, you're going to be on the hook for that. And
that's the law?
Yeah, you bet.
Are you the hearings officer that did so?
Yeah.
Well, you happen to know offhand what the section is?
No, I don't.
Well, we'd have to differentiate, I think, between the alcohol-related offenses.
It's exactly the same with parking.
One of the traffic things. I mean, I don't think we have adults who may blow a stop sign or a red light going to education for driver's education because of that particular offense, which, we have them educated before they get there or get virtue of getting licensed. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I may, in response, I think it's probably true that the Multnomah County metropolitan area has the largest indigenous boating population of anywhere else in the state. I would just ask you to remember that a lot of the other areas, as for example, I suppose, the Snake River, I know Cove Palisades in Jackson County, the Rogue River, have an awful lot of visiting folks who come in from other areas. We also see along coastal stations tragedies that could have been avoided had education taken place somewhere along the line, perhaps not after enforcement action. I would hate to see this bill go away because it's pointed at Multnomah County. It isn't. It's also pointed at the boaters who travel all over the state, whether it's to raft on a Rogue River or water ski at Cove Palisades.
Thank you. Anything further? Kind of smile and move on down the road. Any further? Did we get everyone comments up on board? Appreciate you coming. Anybody else testify on House Bill 3098? We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3098. And open up a public hearing on House Bill 2016. And our most learned and able counsel will bring Representative Baum and Representative Parks and myself up to speed on this bill.
Should we get something special because we're here?
Just a recognition of your cooperation and attendance.
Wow.
Thanks. Thanks.
You're noisy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for those members of this committee that were served in the last legislative body, they will recall that there was discussion in the Judiciary Committee and then subsequently on the floor regarding the transfer of state employees who were at that time employees of the Department of Corrections doing parole and probation work and transferring some of those individuals to county employment for the same purposes. This bill, as it was printed and subsequently amended, addresses that issue. Where it all falls out, I'm not exactly sure, so I will defer to the proponents of the bill. The issue is personnel.
Personnel. I have on the witness list on House Bill 2016.
Wait a minute, where's this piece of paper I just gave
you? Oh.
It's his bill.
We'd like to go ahead and ask Bob Kaiser and Ken Babick to come on up, and they can bring with them whoever they would like to fill up the seats.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kenneth R. Babick, Sr. I'm president of the Federation of Oregon Parole and Probation Officers. As such, I represent approximately 350 parole and probation officers throughout the state of Oregon. More specifically, some of the county parole and probation officers in Marion, Clackamas, Yamhill, and Marion, Clackamas, Washington, and Yamhill counties. This bill directly affects the parole and probation officers now employed by the state of Oregon in the counties of Multnomah and Lane County, since those are the only two counties in Oregon, populations over 200,000, that are not already operating in the Option 1 under the Community Corrections Act. Our major concern with this bill, this session, as our concern with House Bill 2213 last session, was the fact that for some reason, managers in Lane and Multnomah counties believe that it would be easier to supervise parole and probation services in those counties if all officers worked for the county as opposed to having a mixed bag of county and state parole and probation officers. Our major concern with this bill, or with that process, is the fact that if parole officers in Washington or Multnomah and Lane counties are forced into county employment, we see that there could be a significant loss of benefits in transferability and, quite frankly, quality of employment. There are some specific problems such as life insurance and medical dental insurance and leave, so forth, that even though those rates of accrual are guaranteed under the law, there's a major difference in the way the county administers sick leave and vacation and time off as opposed to the way the state does it. In short, what this bill does is it eliminates the discrepancy and, quite frankly, we feel the discrimination that was presented at last session in House Bill 2213 by allowing state parole and probation officers in Lane and Multnomah counties to exercise their option under the Community Corrections Act of 1977. In that act, officers who were employed in a county who chooses to go option one under the Community Corrections Act were allowed the option of remaining state employees or becoming county employees. Quite frankly, that process has worked quite well in Marion and Washington and Clackamas counties, and in some of the other counties, such as Deschutes, who recently became an option one county. In Polk County, for example, a couple employees chose to remain state employees, and the county hired several employees, and when Polk County decided to become an option three county, two of those employees were dumped out of the county employment and wound up in institutions in the state of Oregon. The bottom issue to us is that don't fix it if it isn't broken. And quite frankly, I think 2016 corrects something that was readjusted last session, and it returns that option back to the employees.
Now, we have the original bill, 2016. Then we have a copy of the same bill with some amendments to it. The word after is scratched with a before, and the words and prior to the effective date of this act is blocked out. Or maybe Mr. Kaiser could address. Is that something? Who's are you aware of that?
Yes, that was our amendment.
I'm just checking them. I just want to, you know. Yeah, I'm checking you, actually. Who is this? Since everyone else to testify on this bill seems to have marked a box on the other side of the ledger, whose bill was it? You originally had this bill introduced?
Correct.
Okay. But it just had some language needed to be adjusted, and you've done that in the proposed amendments?
Correct.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Kaiser. I don't want to interrupt your testimony. Are you done? Did he cover it?
He covered it, yes.
Okay. Do you have anything, questions from members of the committee? Why don't you go ahead, Mr. Kaiser, and just briefly explain the amendment for the interested members.
Well, Representative, what that amendment to the bill does is, I believe it's October of 88 or 89, I don't have a copy of the bill in front of me.
89, October 3rd.
What that would in effect do is any county who chooses to become an option one county prior to that bill passing, it would not affect the employees currently employed, but it would protect the employees in Lane and Multnomah counties. It's a major concern to us. Last session, I had probably 40 parole officers in this room that were here in opposition to House Bill 2213. Today, as I speak, I could probably fill this room with 130 parole officers. However, the problem is that we've got a big job to do out there, and it just wouldn't make a lot of sense. And I guess what I'm telling you, this is one bill that's very important to us, and we would like to see it pass out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Questions from members of the committee? Representative Mason?
I've been on this issue a few times before.
Okay. Well,
this sounds familiar.
We just want to make sure that we have opportunity to ask questions or enlighten us. Go ahead. Thank you both for coming.
I still think that it should be on the east side of the Cascades, but that's my...
Well, we appreciate you taking care of us. Susan Kaiser, excuse me if I didn't pronounce that right, and Larry Salmony, and Elise Clausen.
I want to know if the two witnesses are related.
Are the two witnesses related?
It's an inside joke.
That's all right. Thank you. Ms. Kaiser, would you like to go ahead and lead off?
I'm actually have Elise Clausen go first, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure. That'd be fine. Elise Clausen, Department of Corrections. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Elise Clausen. I'm Assistant Director of the Department of Corrections for Community Services Branch. The Department of Corrections does not support House Bill 2016. proposed language in House Bill 2016 would affect counties at the time of conversion to total county participation of community corrections, which means that they operate probation and parole. Counties with a population of 200,000 or more would no longer have the discretion to require all state employees to transfer to county employment. As many of you remember, this issue was discussed at great length last biennium and worked on to a tremendous extent to try to make sure that we took care of employers' needs in terms of the county and the state, but also protected needs of the employees. In the last session, the legislation was enacted to remove barriers and to allow for a smooth transition for counties choosing full participation in the community correction system. The larger counties of population 200,000 or more are able to avoid a mixed workforce that results in a dual system with different pay scales, employee benefits, disciplinary rules, and bargaining units. These differences would be difficult to manage in counties with large workforces, such as Multnomah or Lane County, or essentially any employer with a large workforce. Smaller jurisdictions would still continue to leave the decision to transfer to county employment with the employee. This allows those counties with lower salary ranges from being forced into raising county salaries or redlining transfer to state employees, and that's why the bill was done the way that it was. The original legislation, which was passed last session, House Bill 2213, also guaranteed that all state staff transferring to county employment would not lose salary or benefits, including their police and fire. If the proposed legislation passes, it would create a significant barrier to Lane and Multnomah County moving to option one. The encouragement of full participation in community corrections is included in the statute and the administrative policy of this state. It is the opinion of the department that the current statute meets the needs of counties converted to total county participation in community corrections programs. The original law also offers the necessary assistance to larger counties to move to option one participation while not placing undue restrictions on smaller counties or penalizing staff. The department does not recommend a due pass of House Bill 2016. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Clausen. Ms. Kaser.
Subcommittee Chair and members, good afternoon. My name is Susan Kaser, and I'm here representing Multnomah County Department of Community Corrections in Portland, Oregon. I'm here to testify against House Bill 2016, which repeals ORS .550 subsection 2B. As some of you are aware, Multnomah County has considered becoming an option one county for approximately 8 years. Today, the Multnomah County Department of Community Corrections is formally recommending to our Board of County Commissioners that Multnomah County become a fully participating county under the Community Corrections Act as an option one county for the 1991-93 biennium. The recommendation is being made with the following conditions. One, that the county employees comply with the requirements of ORS 423550 subsection 2, that transferring state employees shall experience no loss of employment or benefits as a result of transferring to Multnomah County, and two, the county exercise its discretion under ORS 423.550 subsection 2B and require all state correctional field officers, immediate supervisors of such correctional officers, and supporting clerical personnel whose jobs involve rendering services assumed by the county to transfer to county employment. The Department of Community Corrections in Multnomah County supported the statutory modifications adopted during the 1989 legislative session. They included House Bill 2212, expanding the goals of the Community Corrections Act to promote local management of community corrections programs, House Bill 2211, requiring the Department of Corrections to adopt a workload-based formula, and House Bill 2213, providing for the transfer of state correctional personnel in large counties to county employment as a part of the process of assuming full management responsibility for parole and probation services. The passage of these bills was instrumental in enabling local counties to make the preferred move to option one status under the Community Corrections Act. The county supported the current mandatory transfer bill, now ORS 423550 subsection 2B, for the following reasons. First, the Community Corrections Act and the Governor's Task Force on Corrections Planning have strongly supported option one as the preferred option. Second, managing employees under a dual system of benefits, work rule, discipline procedures, etc., is incompatible with the goal of developing a fully integrated system with a unified vision consistent with the county's mission. Third, managing employees under contract with financial obligations not controlled by the local supervising authority is not a fiscally responsible option. In Multnomah County, potentially up to 50% of the workforce would be county, and 50% would be state. Fourth, counties need to retain the authority to establish policies consistent with local priorities and negotiate work roles consistent with current county workforce contracts and practices. Fifth, the bill was consistent with current law covering the transfer of public employees. Current law covers the rights of employees when the duties of those employees are assumed by different public employer, the status of transferred employees, the authority of the new employer over transferred employees, and the reemployment right of employees at the end of a cooperative agreement. The county believes the current statute does not negatively impact individuals who are transferred to county employment and that the statute offers state employees transferred to the county greater protection from layoff by creating a unified county workforce. Whereas in a dual system where the county manages county employees and contract employees, such as state employees, the contract employee positions would be the first to be cut if a reduction in workforce were necessary. The county could not be blamed for protecting its own staff. The current statute further guarantees no loss of benefits to all state employees who become county employees under the provision of the Community Corrections Act, including PERS, police and fire retirement benefits for parole and probation officers. In closing, we ask the committee to not support House Bill 2016 and to continue to allow counties within the purview of the current law to make the preferred choice of moving to option one. We ask the committee to not support House Bill 2016 and to allow current law the opportunity to work. We ask the committee to not support House Bill 2016 and support local control and management of community corrections program. We ask the committee to not support House Bill 2016 and support counties who choose to manage a single workforce. We ask you not to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you.
If I could, for the record, Larry Salmony, coordinator of Justice Services, Lane County, just like to go on record for Lane County in opposition to this bill. I think the positions have been well articulated by Elise and Susan, so I won't go further with a discussion.
Thank you very much.
Be glad to answer any questions.
Questions?
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Next on the list, I just...
Nowhere.
Okay.
All right. Close the public hearing. House Bill 2016. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2998. Council?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2998 would prohibit the receipt of a salary paid by a county to a district attorney or deputy district attorney if that person was suspended from the practice of law.
Well, all right.
Unfair to me.
Is it Mr. Glode? Daniel Glode? He's outside? He's had enough of this. Mr. Campbell? Mr. Snyder? Is there anyone who would like to testify on House Bill 2998? Here they are. Mr. Glode?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Campbell? Is Mr. Campbell here? Mr. Snyder, would you like to have a seat? And we've got two different positions, but you can be friendly just for a brief time.
Do I have to be in the middle?
Sure, that'd be a good idea. You bet. Mr. Glode, you go. Let's have Mr. Campbell, you're a supporter of this bill, correct? Would you lead off? We usually like to let these things fly before they take shots at them. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm the county judge of Grant County, Oregon. I apologize for our tardiness. We were in the hall trying to find a middle ground, and I'm afraid that we haven't succeeded.
There aren't any middle grounds in the whole building.
This is true. The correspondence that I've passed to you basically reflects the position that Grant County found itself in, a position which we feel is fundamentally unfair to the taxpayers of the state of Oregon. 8.710 requires that when a district attorney is unable to serve, the taxpayers of the county are obliged to provide a replacement for him in his absence, he or she. Those same taxpayers are more than willing to carry that burden. However, a quirk in the law prohibits the state from suspending pay of that person who is suspended from practicing law. A fundamental requirement of a district attorney is a license to practice law in the state of Oregon. Essentially, we found ourselves in a position of having a district attorney who was suspended for 91 days. We found ourselves in a position of seeking counsel to find out that indeed it was true that we were required to pay for the replacement. Thanks to our neighbors in Baker County, we were able to escape without tremendously detrimental costs to the taxpayers of the county. However, we also felt it should be brought to the awareness of the state of Oregon that it's fundamentally unfair from our perspective that the taxpayers of a county should be required to pay for a replacement at the same time the taxpayers of the state of Oregon are paying for the person who's quote-unquote serving a disciplinary suspension to essentially be on a paid vacation. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them later.
Thank you very much. Let me just, I guess, fact situation, perhaps. If some